I've always wanted to help Japanese startups go global.
Robert, thank you so much for coming here this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And coming early. Well, we were supposed to be here at a certain time. You came an hour early. I like that.
Right.
I like that because I'm always here before anyone comes in. I'm the first one in.
Well, I thought I'd get here early to practice my lines.
So. Is that you have some lines?
No, I don't. I don't.
Right. I like to start off with by asking people, where were you born?
I was born in Long Branch, New Jersey.
Okay.
But let me tell you something about that. I'm a little bit embarrassed about that because my family lived all over the world. My parents met each other in Mexico City in 1965. They got married. They had a baby. I think in that order. And then my dad got a job with an American bank, Manufacturers Hanover Trust, which sent him to the Philippines, which then sent him to Hong Kong, which then sent him to Japan in 1976.
The same bank?
Same bank.
So he's a banker?
He was a banker, yes.
What did he do? What was his job in the bank? Do you know?
I have no idea.
You have no idea?
No idea. You know, when you're a kid, right, you're just these talking heads.
And what number are you? I mean, you said there were six of you. You have five siblings.
Yeah, there's six.
And what number are you?
But the reason, I'm number two.
Okay.
But the reason I'm embarrassed about Long Branch, New Jersey is that the rest of my siblings are born in exotic places like Mexico City, Hong Kong, Japan, Long Branch, New Jersey.
But so. See, that's exotic to all the people that are from Hong Kong.
I don't
Japan.
Think it's exotic to...
You were born in Long Branch. If you're here in Japan, you tell people that, they go, wow, where's that?
Right, exactly.
That's nice. So you spent a lot of time here in Japan, too.
Yeah, we moved here in 1976. But, you know, my dad, the entire time we lived in Japan, he was in the reserve.
Which one?
Navy.
Navy Reserve.
But so every month he went out and spent a day actually at Yokota.
Why at Yokota?
I have no idea. I think because that's where the PX was.
Your father, he was an officer in the reserves, wasn't he?
He was. Okay. He was. So he had done 4 years in the Navy, 60 through 64, stationed in the Philippines.
Okay.
That's where he fell in love with Asia.
Who's above you?
My older sister, Anne.
How many years difference?
Three.
Are all of you close, your siblings?
Yeah, we're all close. We still group chat every day. Actually, our group chat, the name is called Meguro Sharps, because we grew up in Meguro.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the name of the group chat is Meguro Sharps.
And like you were saying, I probably did have one of your sisters in my class.
I think my younger sister,
Shizue. She was at SIJ.
Nishimachi.
Well, then I didn't have her.
Oh, okay.
No.
Okay.
Because that's when Mrs. Matsukata was there and everything,
yeah,
and I knew
yeah.
her.
Yeah. So we, all six Sharps went to Nishimachi. My mother was the librarian.
Okay.
And my father was on the board of trustees. And at that time, Nishimachi was very small.
It was. The campus was wider. You could walk through it and not know that you'd walk through
campus. We Sharp family made up like 10% of the student body population. Yeah. Yeah. But that was the 70s and 80s.
Those were the days.
Those were the days.
And you stayed here until how old?
My family was here till 88.
But how old were you when you left?
I was 17. I graduated from ASIJ in 1987.
And you guys had club membership as well. So
we
you
did.
The American Club. So
we did.
You remember the curtains up there in the teen center.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. The little basketball court down there.
Right, in the basement.
Yeah.
The half court.
Yeah.
Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that little half court.
Half court down the
But
basement.
With two baskets.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you played
baskets,
full
right,
court
right.
on a half court.
Right, right, right,
it was
right.
very messy.
It yeah. sure was, yeah. The ceiling was low.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, outside shots would hit the ceiling. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, those were the days.
They were. They were really good. And the pool, they had the diving board.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, you remember all of that.
Yeah, and so during that time, what were you, I know, you, I'm, well, you're supposed to be interviewing I mean, but, me, but, what, but so what were you doing during that time? Because
well,
I remember you from back then.
Because when I was the only black guy around at that
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
Come on, I mean, no. But after leaving the military in 76, then I got a job at the American School from 77 to 80.
Okay, so that's before the Sharps went there. Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. So I was physical education teacher in elementary school.
Okay.
And I did that for 3 years. And then I formed my own company. It was a gymnastics company.
Okay. That's what I know you as, right. the gymnastics guy.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And then after that, then I had a medical equipment company where I bought and sold used CT scanners.
Oh, okay.
I got them here in Japan because it was a bubble time. They were throwing away brand new three-year used CT scanners, and I would get them
and
refurbished and
that's
clean
expensive
up.
Gear, right?
Yes, yeah, it is. Yeah. Even when it's sold used.
But what, I mean, the Japanese aren't known for buying used product.
At that time, matter of fact,
they would then? Or
interesting story, Robert. What I would do is I'd go to all the manufacturers, there are five of them, that made CT scanners.
In the States?
No, here.
Oh, here, okay.
And I would tell them, it's my company.
Yeah.
But I never told anyone else. Yeah. Everyone else thought I was the marketing director and technician because they wouldn't believe I owned the company.
Right.
And all Toshiba, Hitachi, and Shimazu said, they would never get into used equipment.
Right.
It's a bubble time. Please take our garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years used. They maintain it perfectly.
Yeah.
So I did.
Yeah.
But after the bubble burst, guess who was out of the business right away?
Yeah.
Me, because all of them, the people that retired went into the same business I was doing that I'd developed that they didn't know anything about.
But were you buying the Japanese product and selling it into the States?
Yes.
Okay.
And
okay.
everywhere around the world, but I wasn't buying it. They were paying me to take it out.
They were paying it. What a gig.
It was.
So you're getting paid on both ends?
On both ends. It was so good.
Wow.
Robert, it was just...
And they must have been impeccably maintained.
They were.
Almost like new.
Listen, everyone I shipped them to, and not only that, the way they were packaged in the 40-foot containers I put them in, they said, Lance, there's so much wood in here, we could start a side business.
So I have an interesting story
I'm telling you.
That's relevant to this. When we were kids living in Meguro, the sharp kids, we used to go digging through the trash, Japanese trash, because they'd throw away things that were pristine. And so we'd dig through the trash. So one night we get a knock on the door. It's the local omawari-san, right?
The policeman.
And they
said,
we'd like to speak to your parents. And in hushed tones, we heard this conversation as kids. And then when the police left, my parents said, no more digging through trash. And we said, why? They said, well, they wanted to know if we were having financial issues. And that if we needed help, of course, here we are six gaijin in an expat home, right?
And
we said,
but
were we having financial problems and did we need help because the kids were digging through trash? And we were just looking for
all these goodies.
I mean, it was amazing what they would throw out back then.
Interesting, Robert. I just had a guest on who was talking about how she furnished her first apartment here with the trash the Japanese had thrown out.
Yeah.
Because she's been here 25 years, and she said, it sounds funny, but you had ideas.
It's like new.
It's brand new.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as having it repaired or fixed.
Right.
You just tossed it out.
Right.
It got a scratch on it. It's time to toss it out.
I actually went to a thrift store yesterday in Omotesando.
You mean one of those Hyakuin stores?
It's in Omotesando, so it's a little nicer, but the clothing was nice. It wasn't like a thrift shop on Haight Street in San Francisco.
See, because that's where you're living now, right?
Yeah, I'm in San Francisco.
So you're just back and forth every now and then. You can't get Japan out of your blood, right?
I cannot.
Why is that?
Well, my family lived here for 12 years. Most of my close friends are, from Nishimachi or ASIJ. It's still, 40 years later, it's still a very strong bond. It's something that's very important to me. And the network is just so tight, the Nishimachi and ASIJ network. I'm still in love with Japan and I still love coming back here. And even after a 30-year career in San Francisco and Silicon Valley.
Doing what?
Technology. Okay. Technology business. Mostly related to video technology. So a lot of the gear I see here, I'm familiar with. Video technology from the mid-90s, where we made a software application that compressed video, and we went around telling people that this video, that you can shrink this video, analog video. You can capture it, you can shrink it, and you can put it on the internet. And people would laugh us out of their offices. And then in the early 2000s, I worked for a Japanese a video technology company.
You never, what happened to the compressing the video? Did you?
We sold the company.
But you did well on the selling it. I mean,
we did, yes.
Okay.
We did. Yeah. Okay. And then after that, I worked for a Japanese video technology company in early 2000s.
Did you have to come back to Japan to do so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is your wife Japanese by any chance?
No. Okay. I don't have a wife.
Okay.
I have an ex-wife. Right. And I have a partner of 9 years.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm in between wives.
In between wives. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But I've been with my current partner. I've been with her for 9 years.
Nine years.
Almost 10 years. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's common law.
She's not Japanese.
It's common law. No. Okay. She's from Sacramento. Right.
Is this a sharp thing then? you told me you guys aren't Mormons.
No, not yet.
Were you religious? No. Were you religious?
No, not at all. Not at all.
How did your father maintain? What your mother? What were your mom and dad like? I'm just curious because being a father of four, and talking to so many families, I really learned how to parent from being here and talking to good families, particularly large families, which are a lot work.
Well, you know, my mom only gave birth four times.
You adopted two, the last two?
No, there's twins. And then the last one is Shizue. She's Japanese.
Which was adopted?
It was adopted, the sixth. We had five kids and adopted the sixth.
Okay.
So when you say, what were my parents like? They were crazy.
They
were they adopted
crazy.
That's
the kind of crazy one should be. That is beautiful.
But the interesting story about this is in late 70s, I forget exactly what year, is we went down to Osaka to meet Shizue. And she was around 3 or 4 years old at the time, and she was living in a Buddhist temple. And we went down to meet her. We weren't going to bring her home or anything. It was just a meet and greet, warm her up. And so we go down there. She'd never met a foreigner in her life. We took her to the zoo, the Osaka Zoo, at that time. So we went, and her memory of this later was she saw monkeys at the zoo, which she'd never seen before. So the visit went really well, and afterwards, I guess the adoption agency, the adoption people, they asked Shizue. They said, "Well, would you like to go home with this family now?" And she said, "Well, yeah, I guess I can go live with monkeys."
Do you remember how old you were?
But she.
Do you remember how old you were during this time?
10.
Okay, 10? So you remember the whole family went.
Yeah, the whole family.
But you knew that you might possibly come back with her.
We didn't think we would.
But
we
why,
thought
why
we were just
going
to just
why?
To meet her, and
for
then
what?
Maybe we'd
why?
Come.
You were thinking about adopting?
I was 10. Yes, we were thinking about
adopting.
That's what
I'm
saying. Okay,
yeah,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
We were going to meet her and then maybe go back.
So your
a
family
month
was
later.
The type of family that would get together and they would include everyone. You guys would sit down and have a discussion about it.
Yeah.
As if like you had something to do with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you really did.
Yeah, yeah. It was because I remember there were some Japanese adoption agencies that came to our house pretty regularly for, as a long time ago, and I was young, but a couple of years, they'd come in and spot
it's
check.
It is very difficult to adopt Japanese children.
Yeah, they'd spot
very
check.
Very difficult, yeah.
Yeah, to see how this family of monkeys was doing.
And luckily you weren't getting the trash cans by then. I think right?
I think this was after the trash can incident.
That is something.
Yeah.
So she remembered that situation. She remembered saying she'd go home and live with the monkeys.
She conflated the two, right? She'd never met a foreigner or a monkey.
Right.
So and us, you know, six kids who were just kind of, compared to Japanese kids, we were wild
of
and
course,
out of control,
right?
Right, like,
of course.
Okay, sure. I'll go live with the monkeys.
How's she doing now?
She's great. She lives in Honolulu with her husband.
Who's not Japanese?
He is not Japanese. He's of he grew up in the Bay Area, but he's of Chinese ancestry. And they come to Japan quite frequently. Yeah.
That is so nice.
Yeah.
So tell me, so you're back here
on
a visit. Do you have, what are your plans while you're back here?
Well, I spent 30 years in San Francisco, Silicon Valley technology scene, mostly with startups that nobody's ever heard of. Most of them did not do well. A few did, thankfully.
And you were connected with those few that you started with.
Yes. So A few of them did pretty well. A lot of them didn't, but I learned a lot from those. And so after 30 years, my youngest son, I have two children, a 23-year-old and a 19-year-old, 23-year-old girl and a 19-year-old boy. The 23-year-old has a coffee business in San Francisco, which is really thriving. And the 19-year-old is an art major in college. But when the 19-year-old left to go to college, my partner and I decided to hit the road. I quit my day job.
But you and his mother had already separated.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. A decade before.
But was he living with you?
He was living with me.
Okay. Yeah. Did your daughter live with you as well?
She did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but they're close with their mom too.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But you said.
Yeah.
My kids.
My kids. They're my kids. Yeah. So. Okay. So when my son left the house. I also thought, you know, this is a good time. I've always wanted to help Japanese startups go global. Historically, Japanese startups have really just focused on the domestic Japanese market. It's a big market, and it wasn't necessary, or they didn't feel the need to go global. Well, things are changing, right? The population is shrinking. The economy has slipped into fourth place behind Germany now.
That's
like,
right, that's right.
You know, that was a real shock. Right. And so I think more than ever, it's important for Japanese startups to really think globally from the outset. And I've always wanted to help them, but, you know, kids, jobs, you know, life got in the way. But finally, when my son went to college, I said, you know what, I'm gonna try to split my time between San Francisco and Japan, and I'm going to meet startups who want to go global, and I'm going to help them do that. And so that's one of the reasons here, because I'm now I'm not retired. I don't have a day job.
Right. It's hard to say when someone says, "What do you do?" It's hard and it feels uncomfortable to say whatever you want to do.
Yeah, right. So I'm far from retired, but what I am, I don't have a daily operational job. I am a my LinkedIn title says go to market advisor.
Right.
And I'm working with a couple startups in Silicon Valley. I still actually have a company on the side that has been around for 10 years that's doing okay.
What type of company?
Actually, you might be interested in this. I started this 10 years ago because I had all these old mini DV tapes. Remember mini DV
tapes? I still have a whole bunch of them that I haven't put over to made digital yet.
Well, let me pitch you on this.
Okay.
So I had a whole bunch of them, but
the whole family, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, all these memories. And I was having a heck of a time capturing them.
Because some had deteriorated?
Some had deteriorated, but more so the modern, I'm a Mac guy, but right. The modern Macs just weren't really capable of capturing them anymore. It didn't really, FireWire is the technology
exactly.
That's used. Using iMovie to capture these old tapes was just problematic. And Apple had started deprecating some of the technology, the FireWire technology, and it just became more and more difficult. So I created this product called LifeFlix. And what it does is it's a dedicated capture import tool for old tapes.
What is it? Is it just the wires?
It's just the software.
The software.
So you
got to
still have the camera, and then you need FireWire and Thunderbolt cable. You need
three cables.
Yeah, because you need.
But you're doing this to a laptop.
You're doing it to your laptop.
Okay, to your laptop. But how much space? Well, because that's heavy stuff too when you're bringing in your tapes.
So uncompressed, one 60-minute DV tape is 13 gigabytes.
That's right.
Yeah, but if you compress it, if you bring it in compressed, it's about 3.
But then you have to uncompress it to see it.
No.
You can watch it while it's compressed.
Yeah, because it uses QuickTime to compress it.
Oh, okay.
So while you can capture
but will it still
either...
Be clear? Can you still get the 1080 image you can?
No, because it's old SD. It's standard definition.
Right.
But the LifeFlix has a tool that will upscale it to HD.
Upscale HD.
Yeah.
Would it look good?
It looks fine.
It's okay?
Yeah, okay. It looks fine. Yeah, in fact, I had some old footage from my daughter's like kindergarten days, so 20 years ago, that was shot in SD. And when she graduated from high school, we put it up on a big screen, projector, okay. And I had upscaled it to HD, and it
came
looked okay.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah, so.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Because I remember those days, when we were really fixed on the definition.
Yeah.
Because it came out, so SD is all you had, you know.
Right,
so.
Right. 4x3.
It's 4x3, like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. You know when you look at something 4x3 now, like you're like, what was this 100 years ago? What is this? Right? It wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago.
No.
Because technology just advanced so quick. Because what's the theory they use?
Moore's Law?
Moore's Law, yes.
Yeah. 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 It just keeps advancing and
advancing. It's just so fast. But I heard something the other day from a musician. He was saying that we spent trillions of dollars on AI.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
But we're spending nothing on HR.
Yeah. What, human intelligence? Yeah. Yeah.
Why not? So we're getting our machines to be stronger than us. What about us?
Yeah.
And we should. But what we're going to do, what we're doing already, is implementing it.
Yeah.
We're trying to find out how we can wire it into our system because we've made this thing and it's valuable to us and we don't think this is so sharp. So let's just plug things into it and see if we can't build the functionality externally instead of trying to do it internally by investing in HR.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we could do. So what kind of companies are you interested in helping?
So, yes.
Make it easy for the layman.
So in the United States, it's software companies.
That's what you're really interested in, for sure.
That's in the U.S., and most of them are sort of seed stage, you know, they've raised a little bit of money, but they're very early on, in Japan.
You're talking about in the U.S. that you're helping.
Yeah, that I'm currently helping, yeah.
Well, how many companies are you helping in the U.S.?
One. Well, if you count my own company too.
You're doing that all the time.
Yeah,
so you're one, helping. Yeah. So what you, yeah. How do you, what do you call help? What does help mean?
So the current company in the U.S. Came out of a program called Y Combinator. Y Combinator is an incubator for startups, and it's very well regarded, and they graduate about 600 companies a year. And what I'm doing for this company is actually very similar to what I did 30 years ago. Like, I'm writing copy. I'm helping them develop the technology to go to market, the technology and the techniques to go to market. So, for example, I have helped them de-anonymize their web traffic. So people are coming, people come to your website, you have no idea who they are. But now we're starting to identify who they are. And if they match a certain customer profile, so for this company, we want ad agencies. So if they're a director or a manager from an ad agency, then we want to be able to reach out to them directly with a very personalized message. And so this is kind of a modern lead generation and prospecting system that I'm helping this company implement.
Okay. Is that what they do? What is their business?
Their business is allows you to comment and collaborate on a live website. So let's say Nike and their ad agency want to comment on a certain page or a campaign. Traditionally, what we do is, we'd email back and forth, we'd call, we'd send texts, we'd do Slacks or team messages, like, I want the red to be a little redder, and there's a spelling mistake, right? And it just gets out of control, all the comment. So what this company does, it's called Superflow.
Okay.
what it does is it allows the creative people and management and everything to be working on this website that's already publicly live, right? Like Nike.com, and make all the comments on the live website. in the background, if the Nike marketing manager and the ad agency are doing this, you and I as the public can't see that would be insane. Right. Yeah. You and I can't see it. Okay. But it's a productivity and communication tool. Oh, yeah. But it's a small company, right? It's been around for a couple of years. It came out of Y Combinator.
Y Combinator, when you said they graduate with what? That means
they get a little bit of funding.
But how long are their courses? Is it a course actually that you go into, or you submit something, they say?
You know, I think they do two classes a year, so it may be a six-month session. I don't know exactly, but they go through...
Software companies.
It could be any kind of technology.
Kind of technology.
Yeah,
okay.
Not just software. I think a lot of them are software companies. And there's companies from all over the world. They go through a series of like little boot camps. And there's a lot of mentors who teach them, you know, how to build a business. Mm-hmm. And then there's pitch days at the end where they typically can raise a lot of money.
Is it expensive for them? Do you know what it costs for people to get involved?
No, Y Combinator pays them. They invest in the startup.
I'm talking about when they join their boot camp.
Right. So
I'm sure those.
There are thousands of companies a year that submit an application to be part of Y Combinator.
Okay.
The ones that are accepted, Y Combinator will invest in those companies, like a few hundred thousand dollars or something like that. Yeah.
If they think it's worthy.
If they think it's worthy.
And then when
it's
they
hard
finish,
to get in.
Then when you say when they graduate, that's Y Combinator saying, we now deem you worthy.
Yeah.
Of the outside.
You have gone through our program.
Come to you, right.
Right, you've gone through our program.
And when you look at them, you're saying, that's a certification I really believe in.
Exactly.
So these guys are going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay.
Exactly. So I'm working with a Y Combinator graduate. When you say, you know, how many companies are... Yeah, I keep it very, very narrow. I'm not...
Because are you hands-on?
Yeah, I'm very hands-on. Like I said, I'm doing stuff I did 30 years ago. I'm writing copy, and I'm doing A-B testing on the copy. So, yeah, I don't have 20 clients.
You find the companies that will let you get involved.
let is, I think, the right term.
Of course.
Let.
Because when the guys are doing it, it becomes very... See, and particularly if they happen to be men, this is not a race, you know, it's not a sexist thing at all, but I'm just telling the truth. Since we cannot have children of our own,
right,
our companies become our child.
Right, it's true.
Hard for us to let other people hold it and try to nurture
true.
It. You want to feed it too?
Yeah,
you want to give it a bath? I don't think so. No. And we really touch you with our companies.
No, it's true. It's true. I'm really hands-on. Which I think is like particularly for someone my age who's 54.
Oh, you're still a spring chicken. Go ahead.
But I've been in the business for 30 years, and I think a lot of people who've been doing it that long want to maybe just be an advisor, right? A call a week or something like that. But
You're still learning.
I talked about de-anonymizing web traffic and all of these like.
I haven't heard that term before.
Good.
Because you'd have to be. Because you'd have to be in that field to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. So it used to be like to prospect, to find leads. You know, it was spray and pray, right?
Okay, okay.
You'd email 10,000 people and hope to get a few meetings. Well, now we're trying to build authenticity. Like, I want, and what that is it means Superflow. The company I'm working with, it has a product that really can solve a problem for a certain customer profile. And we really just want to talk to those people. And we're not trying to hoodwink them, right? We're trying to say, look, we built this for you. Can we get your feedback?
Mm.
So the idea is, we don't want to go out there and you know, flip the yellow pages and call random numbers. Like, we really want to talk to marketing managers and directors at ad agencies.
And if you can get with them in Japan,
worldwide,
this is global.
It's global. For Superflow, we're mostly focused on the U.S. right now.
Okay. Because you figure once you get there, you hit so many countries just by doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
But the reason I'm here is I'd like to find another company that I could help
That's Japanese.
That's Japanese that wants to expand into the U.S. market.
Yeah. Not through the Superflow.
Not through Superflow. No, just it would be a completely separate company. Yeah. It'd be a completely separate company. Yeah.
And one.
Just one.
You're just looking for
just one.
I hope you heard that. One company.
Just one
Robert's
company.
Here. You'll be able to contact him through this podcast, so you can do this.
Yeah, just one company. And I'm, like I said, I'm very hands-on finding customers or even investors or partners in the United States.
Helping them find investors and partners in the United States.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, well, how would people contact you?
Well, probably the best way is through my website.
Okay, which is?
www.shoshagroup.com. So Shosha, like trading company, shoshagroup.com.
And then you have some AI in the background that will actually filter it and bring in the people that you're really interested in.
You know, it's a one-page brochure.
One page
so
brochure, yeah.
AI,
yeah,
no, not needed. Just HI.
Just
HI.
There you go.
AI needed, yeah.
Robert, I want to thank you. Before I end this podcast, there's a question I like to ask everyone. If you could go back in time and meet the younger Robert Sharpe.
Yes.
And give him advice.
Yes.
How old would he be and what advice would you give him?
He would be 8 and I would tell him to learn kanji.
But you speak Japanese pretty well.
I can speak, I'm probably intermediate, intermediate level, and I can read and write hiragana and katakana, of course, but my kanji is... non-existent.
Well, it's never too late. You know, it's never too late. It's just, do you want to put time in doing that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I do some like conversation exchange things just to keep my Japanese up.
Right.
And they always
online,
ask.
Online, you mean?
Online. Yeah, online. When I'm in the States and stuff. And the people, they always ask me, they say, well, do you want to work on kanji? I said, nope. And they said, do you want to work on keigo? I go, nope. They said, well, what do you want to do? I said, I just want to talk. I just want to keep it up.
Do you understand what I'm saying? What am I asking?
Yeah.
You just want to be able to communicate. If you can communicate, you're good to go.
I give up on kanji and keigo long ago. Yeah.
Robert, I want to thank you so
much.
Yeah,
thanks, Lance. It's great seeing you.
I want to thank all of you for watching or listening to this podcast. And never forget, it's all on loan, so continue to reach for the stars.
Because you're too blessed to be stressed.